Southwestern Railway. They've introduced their emergency timetable. It's, well, our listeners, just when they're starting to go back into the office, they're now hit by not only the possible introduction of the change timetable from December, which will affect the corridor anyway up to Waterloo, but now from today, less trains.
Yes, yes. Well, I can tell you, because I was catching the train from New Malden this morning and I noticed how crowded the platform was compared to how it's been over the last, you know, couple of months. And certainly it's because I expect people were hoping to catch earlier trains and finding that they were no longer available and having to wait. And I was on the, when I was on the train and I was listening, there was this lady on the other side of the aisle having a telephone conversation. I wasn't eavesdropping, but nevertheless, I could hear her saying to the, whoever it was she was talking to, how cross she was because she'd been hoping to catch an earlier train and it just wasn't running now. So, and I think, and funnily enough, she made exactly the point that you've just said, and that myself and my fellow Lib Dem MPs in South West London have been making over and over again. People are starting to come back into work. You know, we can see that the data is starting to show, thankfully, that infections are slowing down, that Omicron, thank God, is not as bad as we thought it might have been. And it absolutely mystifies me why it is that Southwestern Railway planned for a service reduction to counteract staff absences. How on earth they were able to do that 3 or 4 weeks out, which I think is when they announced it. How do they know they were going to have staff absence then, but they didn't implement it straight away? But why on earth they've gone ahead with it when we're starting to see, as I say, that Omicron has not had the impact that we feared it might, and that absences are starting to decrease, the infections are going down. It just doesn't make any sense at all. And I think for me, what I'm really worried about, and I've made strong representations to Southwestern Railway about this, not just in the last couple of weeks, but over a period of time, certainly when they first announced the December 2022 potential changes, is that what we really need to be doing is attracting people to come back to the railways. I think they've got a number of different challenges now. We know that we've got the ongoing challenge of wanting to get to net zero and reducing carbon emissions. So we do want a real sustained effort to attract people onto the railways and to discourage them from using their cars. But now that more and more people have discovered working from home, how efficient and effective that can be, I think Southwestern Railway are going to have a major problem because, you know, they've always relied on there being a large number of people from our part of the world needing to get into central London to go to their office. But if people can choose not to do that anymore, then it doesn't make sense to have massive fare increases, service reductions, because people will think to themselves, it's too much effort, it's too expensive, it's too much hassle. I can do my work just as effectively from home, pandemic or no pandemic. They really do need to start to attract people back onto the railways. There needs to be a concerted effort to do that, because it's what we need if we're wanting to get to net zero. And that means maintaining services. And the other thing that I've been doing this week is talking to DfT about whether or not they did an environmental impact before their decision to put up rail fares by the amount that they've gone up in recent weeks. And they didn't. They didn't think at all about what would be the impact on the environment of increasing rail fares to the extent that they have. And, you know, that's ridiculous. As I've said, we need to get to net zero. We need to encourage people to use public transport instead of their cars. And we know that increasing rail fares, particularly when there's so many other cost of living pressures, is just going to discourage people from using it. And for the first time, I think, in many decades, people have got an alternative. So it's not just about cutting a few services. It's really about a strategic approach to the future of the railway network and working with train operating companies like Southwestern Railway to make sure that we've got a cost-effective, efficient service that people will want to use. And that's what's really worrying me about not just today's service cuts, but you know, their long-term plans for cutting services in the future.
I think also to undertake this planned change from December at a time when rail usage has been low over the last 2 years, it's a bit of an odd time, isn't it, to suddenly announce that you're going to be reducing your timetables based on a time when train usage has been low.
Absolutely. It's ridiculous. And we, myself and Munira Wilson, MP for Twickenham, have made this point very clearly to the rail minister, that it's ridiculous to be trying to predict what rail usage is going to look like in a year's time based upon numbers that, you know, are, you know, from an unprecedented and, you know, very untypical period of rail usage. So, you know, that's something we're going to keep going back to South Western Railways about. But as I say, it's about much more than that. We need to attract people back into the railways. It's not about trying to predict what demand is going to be and then following demand. It's about stimulating demand. That's what we really, really need to see. And that's why maintaining services and trying to keep fares low is such an important part of attracting people back onto the railways, because that's what we really need people to do.
What do they say to you? I'm guessing it's funding.
I don't think it's so much about funding, actually, because compared to TfL, train companies had a pretty good deal from DfT over the pandemic. They've pretty much had their losses underwritten, unlike TfL, who've been charged with trying to find £1 billion worth of savings. So I don't think it's as much about funding. I think one of the things that South Western Railways often find difficult is reliability, and that's because there's several pinch points on the network. We know about Clapham Junction, we know about Vauxhall, but a bit further out, places like Wimbledon is a pinch point. I think Richmond is a pinch point, and they're trying to get services from quite a large part of the network through all of these pinch points, and a lot of services in a very short period of time. And then you can have any number of things that come along then and interrupt services. And regular users of the railways will see that South Western Railways now have members of staff on platforms who've got bibs saying trespass and welfare officer. And that's to try and counteract the number of people who sadly choose to take their lives by jumping in front of trains. And that, it sounds very callous to say that has an impact on reliability. It has a much bigger impact on the, you know, on the train drivers, on obviously the families of those affected. It's a really, really awful thing. And that's why South Western Railways are putting money and staff into trying to counteract that. But it's just an example of the kind of thing that interrupts reliability. And that South Western Railways are working upon. But they would very much like fewer services, because then they can increase the reliability of the ones they have. I have to say, it's not working. I've been speaking to some of my constituents in Mortlake, for example, and that railway line that comes through there, and they're finding that not only are they getting fewer trains, they're also, the trains that are scheduled aren't turning up on time anyway. So there are massive pinch points on the network which impact reliability, but it's not good enough for South Western Railways just to be saying, well, fewer... I mean, it's kind of like... One service a day, but, you know, it's reliable. It's kind of, that's not what people want.
You mentioned TfL. Let's move, it sort of segues quite nicely into the ULEZ, because obviously that expanded in October. And what in your newsletter you mentioned, trying to get to Mortlake Crematorium. That means people in one half of the borough are now having to pay to use their crematorium.
Well, my worry about Mortlake Crematorium, and actually, very sadly, I'm going there on Friday for a funeral, and we've been sent the details of the funeral, and I'm very pleased to see that the family have put on it that it's in the ULEZ. But what my real worry about that is that obviously local people will be aware that there's a ULEZ and that there's a boundary, but obviously we will have family and friends of the deceased travelling from quite some distance. It's not, they won't just be coming from Richmond Borough, they will be coming from, you know, all over the country. They won't know what a ULEZ is, they won't know that the boundary is there, and they will obviously be thinking about the funeral that they're about to attend. So without so my real worry is for those friends and family will then be clobbered with ULEZ penalty notices for, you know, at a very difficult time for them. So that's the thing that really concerns me. Obviously, for local residents in Richmond Borough, I am concerned firstly about the crematorium, but also about the Townmead Recycling and Household Waste Centre. I was there the day, you know, about a week after the ULEZ was introduced, and they told me there'd been a huge drop-off in cars accessing it. And people can still, will travel out to Hounslow or maybe up to Ealing, and it's kind of, it doesn't make sense to make people drive so much further with their waste if what we're trying to do is improve air quality.
For people who don't have a car or really struggle to get their rubbish to the recycling centre, do you think this is going to have an impact on fly tipping in the streets?
if you make it difficult for people to do the right thing, then that's what will happen. And I think, as I say, the point about the ULEZ is that for people who are doing the right thing but happen to have a diesel car, then they will end up driving much further in their diesel car, and that is surely counterintuitive in terms of what we're trying to achieve. We want to encourage people to dispose of their waste responsibly. We want to encourage recycling. We don't want people travelling long distance in polluting vehicles. So for me, that was always an excellent... I mean, I think that the trouble is, when they introduce the ULEZ, they think about how they can improve air quality within the ULEZ, but obviously that means that to a certain extent some polluting activity is going to be pushed outside the ULEZ, and that has a massive impact on my constituents as well. So, you know, that's the sort of thing I've been pushing the mayor about. It's kind of like, well, what monitoring are you doing about those, for those streets that are outside it? So
what's the likelihood that will get reviewed, do you think?
So I've been pushing for monitoring for the border, because as I say, there's no point improving air quality inside the ULEZ at the expense of poorer air quality outside. What we want to see is that the implementation of the ULEZ drives the kind of behaviour that improves air quality for everybody, regardless what side of the boundary they live in. So I mean, my understanding is that it's only it's diesel vehicles and much older vehicles that are still non-compliant. We think that the majority of vehicles are compliant. And that it shouldn't cause anybody any problems. But I'm just waiting to see the results, really, of the monitoring. And if I'm finding that my residents outside the boundary are now suffering quite poor air quality, then I will certainly be taking that up with the mayor.
And with regards to Hammersmith Bridge, because it is a major issue, isn't it? I mean, what's the update? What's the latest with that?
So I'm chasing DFT again,
Hammersmith and Fulham
this week. Yes, I know. And it's just frustrating. We just don't have any way forward. I mean, what's the issue at heart, and I'm sure many of your listeners will appreciate this, is it's extremely expensive to mend. It's a unique bridge. It dates back to the 1840s or the 1870s, you know, depending whether it's original construction or it's kind of refurbished state. But it's a historic bridge. And so there is never going to be a quick, easy or cheap fix to mending it to the standard we need it to be mended, so that it can be used at the capacity that people want to see. So that's the big problem. But there's a real lack of will, I think, at the Department for Transport to actually find solutions for this. I've tackled them about how they funded other bridges. I've tackled them about, whether different alternatives can be considered. But we're just not seeing the kind of impetus from the Department for Transport. And without their willingness to put a substantial sum into the project, then, it's just not going to make much progress. Recently, I've been asking them, so for example, a condition of the October 2020 bailout of TfL was that they had to put in a ferry service. But then 6 months later, the bridge was then reopened to pedestrians and cyclists. So they spent about 400,000 on this ferry service, which now isn't needed because it would only serve those two groups anyway who are already got provision. So it's frustrating. We need to see movement. I'm pushing again. There's not much, I'm afraid, to report at the moment, but I really, really hope that 2022 will start to see at least some plans and some funding in place, at least for the stabilisation, so that we can at least ensure long-term provision for cyclists and walkers. But I'm very much pushing for at least to be able to get buses back over it, because it's the lack of buses that is really causing a problem. For those who've got reduced mobility or disabilities or whatever it is, that means that they can't walk or cycle across the bridge but need to be able to get over there for hospital appointments or for accessing the tube or whatever it is. I really, 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 really want to see buses back over Hammersmith Bridge, and I will keep fighting for that.